Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
It's 4:06 and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Today on the show, we're talking with the candidates running in next week's primary election for state treasurer. The current office holder, Kurt Schuller, is not seeking re-election. He was unable to get rid of his own office, a promise he made when campaigning in 2010. Our next guest wants to do what Schuller couldn't and get rid of the office once and for all. Matt Adamczyk is a Republican candidate for state treasurer. He's a rental property owner and former legislative advisor in the Wisconsin legislature. He joins us now by phone. Matt, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, out of the four primary challengers in this race, you're the only one running to eliminate the office of state treasurer. Why?
Well, I support the elimination effort because, frankly, the office has become a figurehead position and there are really no duties left there. And I'm a believer when you have an office that doesn't have anything to do, that we just go ahead and get rid of it.
The argument has been made that the office is needed and should have some of those powers you mentioned restored. The case to be made for that kind of office is we need a balance, not too much power going to the governor's office, to the executive. It's kind of an extra little check and balance. Is there any argument to be made in that way?
Well, I guess I'd say this. The duties that were removed, such as the last big duty was the unclaimed property program, and that was moved to the Department of Revenue. This was being handled previously by bureaucrats in the treasurer's office, so now it's being handled by people that work at the Department of Revenue. It's not necessarily a power grab. I would definitely not call it that. I would say it's been moved from the treasurer's office over to the Department of Revenue for efficiency purposes. And I'll give you just a very quick example. Unclaimed property, this is like, you know, lost money, lost checking accounts, that type of stuff. Somebody like yourself might have $25 from a previous bank account. Previously, the only way you could access that money under the treasurer's office is that you would have to file a claim. Well, under new legislation passed last session, a bipartisan legislation, all members of the legislature supported, as well as Governor Walker signed it. The new legislation, which goes into effect next July, Department of Revenue is going to be able to use your tax information that they have and start linking those people up on the unclaimed property list and start giving them back their money automatically. That'll be the first time in the history of the program that could happen.
There has been criticism that since unclaimed property was moved from the treasurer to the Department of Revenue, that there's been a backlog. Does that worry you?
I guess the term backlog is what was used by the people in the media. The number of people on the list that are waiting to get their money is increased. Let's say it went from 3,000 to 8,000 or something like that. And I wouldn't say that I'm concerned by the term backlog, in that the people that are on that list, they have 90 days to receive their money, either approve them or deny them the money that they've claimed. I'm not worried about those people on the list because those people are going to get their money, either if they have it coming to them or if they don't have it coming to them. The real problem with the unclaimed property program is not the 8,000 people that have applied for it. It's the thousands, tens of thousands of people that have money and either, one, don't know about it, or two, know about it and don't want to deal with the burdensome paperwork in order to claim it. And that's why the new program over at the Department of Revenue, which is going to start to link up these things automatically and send it back to the taxpayer, is just so much more efficient.
The incumbent who's not running, current state treasurer Kurt Schuller, as we mentioned, ran under the promise of doing his best to get rid of the office of the state treasurer. He made an effort early on. Some in the assembly supported him. He got some support there. But here's election time. The office still exists. What would you do differently to try to successfully eliminate the office of treasurer?
Well, I guess I'd start by saying that I don't believe Kurt Schuller actually pushed for the elimination effort. Early on in the four-year term, he helped, you know, supposedly get a bill amendment put together. But this last legislative session, when the bill came up, for example, in the state assembly, it passed there with 57 Republicans and 10 Democrats, including the Dem leader. So that was 67 to 32. That's a supermajority vote. After that happened, he did not make one comment, did not congratulate them for getting it done, and he never attended a public hearing in regards to the elimination. I don't believe he cared to. Partially probably because his deputy was running for the office at the time. I don't know his reasoning, but I don't believe he actually pushed to eliminate the office. That's going to be a complete difference for me I'm going to do it from day one till the end of my term, but I'm confident we can get it done.
When you enter office, if you win, the office will still be there. Between then and the hypothetical elimination of the office, what would you change in the Treasury office?
Well, I guess some people think that this office has all kinds of fiscal responsibility and duties. That's just not true. The state treasurer has, it's one person, the treasurer, and three staff. So the whole agency consists of four people. And the three other people that work in the office are a deputy, a communications director, and a secretary. And I've pledged I can run the office by myself. That saves, if I don't hire three additional staff, that saves over 80% of the budget day one. There is not that much to do in the office. There's no reason that four people need to do the duties. I can do it all by myself and save the taxpayers, like I said, about 80% day one. But I will use my entire time in office, one, to eliminate the office, and then two, to look for other areas of government efficiency or other government waste, to try to shine a light on it, work with the legislature to try to, you know, improve them.
Yeah, on that issue of finding government waste outside of the treasurer's office, what kind of things would you look for? How would you work with the executive, the governor's office, and the legislature to target those?
Well, I guess I have some good relationships, having, you know, worked in the building for, you know, almost a decade. But the thing that I would do most is that I would try to find the areas where I see that there's problems, either areas where government waste is happening or efficiencies could be made. And then I would have to work with the legislature and work with the governor or any other, you know, department head or whatever, because the treasurer just does not have any power himself. He does not have that power. But I tell people I will work with the legislature because they are the ones that will have to, you know, pass any new laws to change things for the better.
It's a rare situation that someone runs for an office with the intention of eliminating it. What made you feel like you were the person to take on this job and get rid of it?
That's a very good question. I'm actually asked that quite a bit by people. I mean, people say you're running for office to get rid of your own job, and I say yes. And it is a different, it's kind of an odd, you know, scenario, but I decided to step up a few months back because it looked like every single person that was running for the office was just going to run. There was nobody running to say, let's get rid of this office. And 4 years ago, the guy was elected. Now, granted, I told you he did nothing to really work at it, but I believe our state wants to get rid of this office. A couple of the big papers in the state have editorialized saying, let's get rid of it. And since that election 4 years ago, the legislature has only taken more responsibilities away. I mean, we literally are left with a treasurer that I believe literally has nothing to do. So for that reason, I said I need to make sure that somebody runs to actually, you know, follow through on I believe, the will of the state to get rid of this office once and for all.
Can you talk a little bit about your career background in politics and elsewhere that makes you well suited to take this job, do the negotiations, help write legislation and get rid of it?
I guess I would say, I mean, I have worked in the building as a capital staffer, policy advisor for almost a decade. And so I have a good rapport with many of the people in the building. I know people, you know, staff on both sides of the aisle. I do have 17 different assembly sponsors, endorsers for my campaign. So I have many people that I can go to that I have a good rapport with already. But I think right now the big thing is just a referendum question. I believe this is a mini referendum. On August 12th, I support eliminating the office. My opponent does not. So if you're voting in the Republican primary and you think that this office should be eliminated, I guess I'd ask for people's vote.
Win or lose, do you think the will is there in the legislature to go through the process of amending the Constitution to get rid of this office, pass it through the legislature, do it again, and then get voters out there to back you up?
I definitely believe so. I mean, any time a bill, and it's an amendment, it passed in just the one House last year. We kind of ran out of time there with the Senate, but when it passed the Assembly, like I said, 67 to 32, that wasn't a close vote. That's a large majority. It's two-thirds. Typically, when a bill passes one of the houses by two-thirds vote, it should be able to pass the other House. And I believe, especially with the makeup of the possible new Senate, that there are going to be plenty of people that want to, you know, support this next session.
A brief final message to voters before I let you go.
I guess the big difference, again, when you vote on August 12th, if you think an office that does nothing costs the taxpayer $1 million, I guess I'd encourage you to vote for one of my opponents. But if you think that this office that is literally a waste of $1 million and it's the bipartisan effort to get rid of it, it's not only supported by Governor Walker. Even Tom Barrett supports eliminating the office. And like I said, there was bipartisan support in the legislature. So if you're willing to eliminate this office, save $1 million of taxpayer money, which can be used either, you know, for other purposes in government, I ask for your vote on August 12th. And again, my name is Matt Adamczyk.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Matt.
Okay, thank you for having me.
That's Matt Adamczyk. He's a Republican candidate for state treasurer. Now we turn to Randall Melchert. He's an attorney and a conservative activist. He's one of the two Republicans running for state treasurer in next Tuesday's primary. He joins us up here in the studio. Randall, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on today.
So why do you want to be the next state treasurer here in Wisconsin?
Well, I was approached about running because our state's constitution is at risk. Since the beginning of the state of Wisconsin, the point of the constitution has been that we have an elected independent state treasurer.
And what do we lose if we eliminate that office, as your opponent wants to do, or take a lot of the duties away from that office, as has happened?
What you do is you're building out the bureaucracy and you're removing accountability. We've seen this especially with the big backlog in unclaim property ever since it was moved to the Department of Revenue. Before it was in the Department of Revenue, the backlog was could be handled in about a week. You'd file your claim, you get it back in about a week. Now it's moved to over 77 days. According to the latest reports, the backlog is growing by over 500 claims a week. The rate we are within a couple weeks of massive legal liability because any of those people who's been waiting over 3 months, they are able to sue the state of Wisconsin and not only get their money back, but also collect attorney fees. And we've seen enough of these late night TV lawyer ads. Now all we need is just the lawyers being able to sue the state, pull up millions from the state.
Well, the idea is, I think, that there's a duplicated bureaucracy. You've got people handing money in the treasurer's office. You've got people handing money in the Department of Revenue. That's extra bureaucrats in a way.
Well, it's actually two different types of things. Department of Revenue tends to get the money out of your pocket. The treasurer's job is to get the money back to your pocket. And it actually goes back to really the founding of America. John Locke, one of the early political philosophers, point out that government's got three purposes: protect life, liberty, and your property. And just because your bank doesn't have your current address doesn't mean that you lose your right to your property. That's why, under the British system, your property would go to the crown. In America, it still belongs to we the people, and that's why we have these systems, unclaimed property set up to hold on to it. And so it serves a vastly different purpose than the Department of Revenue does.
We've seen in previous interviews you've talked about following the lead of the state treasurer in Kansas. Can you talk a little more about that?
Sure, and this is the big thing that nobody's really talking about. They keep talking about some of these nickel and dime moves. We have an opportunity to return over $300 million back to the state of Wisconsin. There's about $17 billion nationwide of these unclaimed savings bonds. And so they have been sitting up. State treasurers have been getting them in their unclaimed in their safe deposit boxes. In fact, 14 years ago, our own state treasurer, Republican state treasurer Jack Voigt, started the process to sue the federal government because we can check the newspaper, see if our name's published, file a claim, get our unclaimed property back. Federal government doesn't do that at all. And so that's why several state treasurers around the nation said, hey, we need this money back so we can actually return it to the people who own it. And so this year, we actually saw the first time that a treasurer's been able to win, and Kansas has already seen about $1 million come back. Wisconsin, we have up to $300 million that we can bring back to Wisconsin, money that we're able to use the interest to help defray taxes, money that we're able to return to the people that it belongs to. I mean, with this unclaimed property, we've seen families seeing $20,000, $25,000 that they're able to return back. And that's going back to our basic constitutional privileges, is that government's to protect property, not to get more money from you, not to build a bureaucracy, but to protect your rights to your property.
Does the state treasurer have the ability to pursue that here in Wisconsin now, or would the legislature need to grant that power over?
Well, we'd also be wanting to work with the attorney general on this, as we'd be part of a lawsuit against the federal government. So this is some area where part of it is most of the people don't pay attention to the state treasurer. Many of my opponents think that Governor Walker, the legislature, everybody and their brother spends their waking moments to figuring out how can we get rid of the state treasurer. And that's completely false. Most people are unaware of what the state treasurer does, but what it does do, it does effectively. And where we're able to work with the rest of the legislature, help improve access to the unclaimed property, returning, as the state treasurer's been doing, returning over almost $40 million a year to the people. When it moved to revenue, That amount went down to $20 million.
So apart from unclaimed property and getting on board with other states on these savings bonds, what other duties would you like to see restored to the Treasurer's Office, added, or made more use of?
Well, let's first clear up the misconception. I heard my opponent on here saying that the Treasurer is a do-nothing job. That is completely false. Right now, before you do one more thing, there is still 114 statutory citations where it talks about what the state treasurer does. Just came out, the state treasurer's on the State Depository Banking Authority. That saved taxpayers $1.4 million by renewing the contract with U.S. Bank. State treasurer's in charge of promotion of unclaimed property. State treasurer's on the board of UW Treasurer. State treasurer works with your county treasurers. In fact, we have 72 counties. Every county in this state has a constitutionally elected county treasurer. There's 114 statutory responsibilities. The biggest that nobody really talks about, Board of Commissioners of Public Lands, is a $1 billion trust fund that's dedicated to helping defray our taxes by putting more money into our schools.
You also have talked about increasing the treasurer office's transparency, giving people a better understanding of where their money is going. How would you do that?
Sure. We've seen the start of this with the state open book, but a lot of people, in fact, somebody just stopped me at the state fair and they said, you know what? I go onto my municipal website. I download the budget. It's 45 pages. There's no simple chart of accounts. You know, some of the stuff is listed on this fund and that fund. There's segregated funds. There's general purpose revenue. Nobody really understands exactly how their government works. But what, as a state treasurer, we're kind of the state's fiscal policy think tank. We're in charge of helping people understand what their government is doing. Where is this money going? Is this going the right place? We've got a lot of different changes that we can be able to make to help increase the transparency.
Are there other initiatives that you'd want to undertake as state treasurer?
Sure. One of the programs that I bet you any of your listeners has not heard about for years, ever since it was taken away from the state treasurer, is the EdVest program. Right now in Wisconsin, people owe $18 billion in college debt. $18 billion. And yet the state of Wisconsin makes available deductions, credits, massive incentives to save money for college. $18 billion of debt that we'd be able to reduce. In fact, I was just talking to our previous Republican state treasurer, Jack Voigt, who helped lead the EdVest program. In fact, he worked with Governor Thompson to make sure that the EdVest program would not use one taxpayer dollar, that the fees generated would even be actually bringing money into the state. As a result of that program, we can help parents save for college. That's one of the programs that worked wonderful under the treasurer's office. Now that it's been moved to a bureaucratic agency, nobody's heard the word EdVest for years.
As state treasurer, you wouldn't be able to go it alone here. Some of what you're talking about would need the state legislature to move things back under the treasurer. How would you see yourself working with state lawmakers and the governor's office for that matter?
And as my opponent mentioned earlier, you know that there was a bill in place to eliminate the state treasurer, but it didn't just run out of time. It was stopped by conservatives in the state Senate. That there are many people who realize that this whole move to get rid of an elected official and expand the bureaucracy is a dumb move. Conservative talk show hosts said that the move to take away some of the functions of treasurer was the dumbest thing they'd ever heard. Senator Glenn Grothman was interviewed in the Milwaukee Journal, and he said that, you know what, nobody is as passionate about the state treasurer as helping to return $40 million a year back to the people. These are the people who are making a difference. In fact, that's why I've been endorsed by the Republican Assembly Caucus Chairwoman, Joan Baldwin. I've been out on the trail. We've been talking to people around the state. When I first ran, people would say, yeah, you know, aren't they trying to get rid of it? But after we've seen these stories about these scandals going on, were massive backlogs, that ever since then people are saying, you're not that guy who's trying to get rid of it. We need to keep this office elected. And, you know, people who live in the industrial parts of the state, in Madison, Milwaukee, Waukesha, you can't cross the street without hitting an elected official. But when you're out in some of the state parts of the state, Monroe County, out in Clark County, Taylor County, some of these state reps represent three whole counties. They don't suffer from a dearth of elected officials. They're lucky to see their state rep as they're making the rounds of three counties. And that's why people believe that we need accountable representation. That's why we're seeing increasing support. More and more people. Some assemblymen thought, well, hey, we'll give it a try. We'll see if DOR can make it work. They're realizing with the newspaper investigations, it's not working. And that's why the Senate, in their wisdom, and part of it's because they remember back previously when Jack Voigt was our state treasurer, the great work that the state treasurer can do and will be able to do again.
So why do you think that the position is atrophied and got such a bad name over the years that many were calling for its elimination?
part of it depends on the state treasurers that are operating the offices. Back under State Treasurer Jack Voigt, we saw the great work with EdVest, with unclaimed property, with the beginning of the effort to try to bring back these unclaimed savings bonds. However, when Jack Voigt lost in 2006, by the way, in that race, the Republican candidate got defeated in a massive landslide. But Jack Voigt had such bipartisan appeal, he got about his margin of difference. There was over 100,000 votes closer. People realized, whether they were Republican or Democrat, we need a good, solid fiscal leader. In fact, Jack Voigt's margin was so close that he could have called for a statewide recount. But he said, you know what? This is going to cost taxpayers far more than it's going to benefit them. You know what? The vote total won't be overturned. I'm not going to put taxpayers through this, and I'm just going to concede defeat. And that was what a man of principle did. Since then, we've had state treasurers who haven't been nearly as competent, who haven't had the background. We've had some, like previous treasurer Kurt Schuller, who realized, you know what, maybe this office does need to be eliminated. But you know what? He's actually endorsed me because he's realized that taking away these functions from a directly accountable office, under his term of office, they saw record rates of return. Under Department of Revenue, it went down $20 million a year.
A brief final message for voters in next Tuesday's primary.
Sure. If you'd like to learn more information, go to my website, randymelchert.com, randymelchert, M-E-L-C-H-E-R-T.com. We've got much of the endorsements. Every living Republican treasurer's endorsed me, Waukesha County treasurer, many different groups. We've a lot of people are realizing that we need to return the state treasurer back to its original constitutional role, and that's why I'd appreciate their vote on Tuesday. Randymelchert.com for more information.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Randall Melchert, one of two Republicans running for state treasurer.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
This is Central Time. That was Richard Nixon announcing his resignation from the presidency in an address to the nation that took place 40 years ago tomorrow. Nixon then officially left office 40 years ago this Saturday.
In the years since, we've learned a lot more about President Nixon and what was going on behind the scenes at the White House, but getting that information wasn't easy.
Stanley Cutler joins us to talk about the Nixon presidency and the legacy he left behind. Cutler is the E. Gordon Professor Emeritus of Law and History at the UW-Madison. He fought for the release of the secret Nixon tapes. Stanley, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, I'm surprised at 40 years. I got to tell you, it went very quickly. Yeah. And, you know, for a lot of the people who...
having fun.
For a lot of the people who were there, I think they probably have kind of this conceived notion of Richard Nixon. But 40 years, there's a lot of people who weren't there. And so kind of taking that into account, looking at this anniversary, is it more than just an historical footnote?
Oh, I think it's much more than that. First of all, Richard Nixon liked to always brag about that he was the first to do this, the first to do that. Well, he is very exceptional because he's the first and thus far the only president to ever resign from office. He resigned, of course, amid all the rubble and scandal of Watergate. Richard Nixon, I would argue, is slated to go down in history in the following ways. Richard Nixon, history textbooks will say, if we still have textbooks then, will say was the first president to resign the presidency. It may say he did something else, but that'll be the first thing. It is, to quote Macbeth, it is the spot that will not out. And so that's the first thing that's important about Nixon. But on the other hand, I would argue that Richard Nixon is probably the dominant political figure of the last 60 years. He was a man who liked to make history. He made a lot of history, but it's not all good. It's for some of it was good. For example, getting developing detente with the Soviet Union. But on the other hand, it took him 4 years to negotiate a peace settlement in Vietnam, the same one he could have had 4 years earlier without 25,000 American dead. And today, we ignore the lessons of Vietnam. So it's a very mixed grab bag, but he's there, and you got to pay attention to him. Finally, I would note, in terms of achievements, and here You could take it either way you want. It's Richard Nixon who reorders the political landscape by capturing the South for the Republican Party. And today, that segment of the Republican Party is the dominant voice. Secondly, he reconstituted the Supreme Court, particularly with his appointment of William Rehnquist, and in effect, he undermined so much of the constitutional achievements of the late 20th century. So that, you know, if you like those achievements, you're unhappy with Nixon. If you didn't like those achievements, like desegregation and civil liberties, then you're one with Richard Nixon. So, but the point is, he's there. He's constantly in our political conversation.
And, you know, he's also somebody that we're still learning more about. I just heard some of the sort of newly released Nixon tapes the other day.
They're not newly released.
Okay.
They're newly transcribed.
Ah, okay. That's right.
You understand that the tapes have been out now for 17 years as a result of my lawsuit. Okay.
So they were new to me. How about that?
Well, okay.
Fair enough.
Listen, I call it the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
You always find something new in there.
Yeah, tell me.
It's amazing.
Tell me about the fight that you led to help release them, why it was so important, and what we are still learning from those today.
Well, I went after them because historians want to get at sources. And I knew that this was a great source. And, of course, you understand we would not have the tapes today if Richard Nixon were alive. He was going to fight to his last breath to keep those things hidden. Finally, after he died, you know, the estate, which had no more money to fight, bowed down and we got the tapes. But they're an important source. For example, you know, before the tapes all came out, people say, well, you know, the evidence against Nixon was flimsy. Well, as we now have the tapes, it's no longer flimsy. We have Richard Nixon talking about paying hush money. We have Richard Nixon talking about breaking into the,
Watergate?
Not Watergate, Brookings Institute.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, now we have clear-cut evidence of criminality, because obstruction of justice is a criminal act.
So, and it's so interesting, too, because the tapes kind of illuminate one of the contradictions of Nixon in some ways. He was so interested in his legacy and preserving his legacy and having that taping system in place, and that taping system is what hung him.
Right. That's the contradiction. He always argued that the tapes will exonerate me. Oh, sure, if he could have gone through and selected out parts. I mean, for example, you have one day everything's collapsing around him. They find out that his aide had approached a federal judge during the trial of Daniel Ellsberg. And Nixon knows this, and, you know, and they're trying to figure out their way out. And then suddenly John Dean comes in the room. And John Dean says, oh, Mr. President, I just learned. And he tells him about, and Nixon says, you did? I didn't know that. You know, so here we have it on tape. After these other conversations, the Nixon says, I don't know. Well, if he could have released that tape and not the others. But, you know, he had nearly 4,000 hours of tape. It would have taken him a couple of lifetimes to disentangle them.
And so as we listen back to those tapes now, as we think about Richard Nixon, as we think about this idea of a president resigning from office, which, you know, in hindsight seems like such a fantastic thing.
Never happened before.
Yeah. Tell us kind of about the mood of the country at that time.
And, well, I, you know, every man is own historian to some reason,
yeah.
Some ways. But I think there was a collective sigh of relief. Relief that it was all over. It was all over. And these are for people who supported Nixon, people who were after him. Don't forget this, that when the House Judiciary Committee votes articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon, that's a bipartisan affair. You know, when Clinton or Andrew Johnson were impeached, not one member of the other political party supported them. With Nick Clinton, it was all Republicans. With Andrew Johnson, it was all, in those days, the radical Republicans who voted to impeach him. But Nixon was unique. There were 9 votes on the House Judiciary Committee by Republicans voting to impeach him.
And so then after he left office, one of the things that Nixon worked very hard at, I think, was trying to restore his image. How did he do?
I always say he spent the last 20 years of his life campaigning for history. Oh, yeah. He wrote book after book. He wrote book after book to support his lawyer habit, to protect the taste, but also to enhance his reputation. And I don't think it really got him very far, because I'm so sure of this, that when history will recall Nixon 100 years or so from now, it will be with the opening line that the first and only president to resign. And that's it. You know, people are not going to remember that the president went to China, or that the president vetoed the Clean Water Bill, or something like that. That's all trivial. That's the way I think he's going to be remembered. But he's interesting, nevertheless. You know, I don't think you find a president, the last 8 presidents among them, who could command the interest of Nixon.
Well, that's a great place to leave it. Stanley Cutler, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye now.
That was Stanley Cutler, the E. Gordon Professor Emeritus of Law and History at the UW-Madison, reflecting on the Nixon administration on the 40th anniversary of Nixon's resignation from office.
Coming up, the Wisconsin State Fair runs through this weekend, and we're asking you to share your favorite fair memories of all time. What's the best experience you had at a county or state fair? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This week, we are in the middle of the Wisconsin State Fair, and we're going to be asking you for your favorite fair memories. It doesn't have to be the state fair. It could be a county fair, a sweet corn festival, any kind of fair. What is one of your favorite memories of the magic of the fair? Was it the rides? Was it the cotton candy? What was it? Give us a call and give us something to share at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. That's at talk@WPR.org.
And what is it that keeps you coming back to state fairs or county fairs? Is there a favorite fair food you look forward to indulging in each and every time you go? Is there a favorite event? Or do you exhibit at your county fair or even at the state fair? We'd love to hear about that. If you exhibit livestock, arts and crafts, cakes, amazing cakes at the fairs. I wish they'd let you eat them, but... So anyway, share why you love the fair at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. There's also a spot for you on the Central Time Facebook page. Gene, you have a story, I think.
That's not much of a story. I was actually at the state fair yesterday.
Right.
You knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually there for a meeting. During the state fair, they have meetings of one kind or another. And I was there in the exhibition hall with my suit and my tie. And there were about 4 of us in the middle of thousands of people wearing suits and ties. And the cream puffs were there. And the cream puffs, of course, in Wisconsin State Fair are legendary. And all I can say is they should be, because they are delicious.
Did you eat one, risking putting your suit at risk?
It was after the meeting. It was all very safe. And it was really fun just wandering around. I did have a chance to walk through some of the exhibits. And, you know, there is something about the fair, and it reminded me that I like to spend more time in places like that.
You can share your favorite things about the state fair, the county fair, food, farming, or otherwise. 800-642-1234 is the number. We've got Laura in Madison to start us off. Laura, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your fair memory?
Okay, our fair memory was up in Hustler. It was at Hustler Fest up in northern Wisconsin, or mid-Wisconsin. They had, we were there with my family, and they had something called the chicken poop game.
I think I know how this one goes.
Oh, my God.
How does that work?
The funniest thing we ever saw. Okay, so there's a plywood piece, a piece of plywood on the ground, and it had squares on it with numbers. And then there was a chicken wire around this plywood piece, and they would throw a chicken in there. People would put money on which number they thought the chicken would poop on. And, of course, everybody's around this fence going, over here, trying to get the chicken to stand by their number so that it pooped on their number, and then you'd win the money. It was absolutely hysterical.
Did you place a wager, Laura?
Absolutely. I did not win, though.
You did not win. All right. Laura, thank you so much. That's a great one. And now you can share your memory at 800-642-1234. It's the State Fair. We want to hear what you love about going to the State Fair, the County Fair, your favorite event, your favorite thing to do, your favorite memory.
And I have to say, you can do the same. You need more room. You can do the same game with a cow in a football field. You can. I've seen it. It's fantastic. Let's go to Gary now. Gary joins us from Watertown. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Your filter, when I talked to her, it was like some 50 years ago, so I can't remember, too much detail about it. But a bull got loose once, and he was running up and down the streets of the fair.
That must have been sort of exciting. Bulls are kind of notorious for having bad tempers.
Yeah, like I say, I don't remember too much about it, but I remember that.
It sounds like a memory worth keeping, and you're here to tell the tale.
Yeah, that's one thing you don't anticipate at the county fair is a running with the bulls, or at least one bull in this case. I made it to the Dane County Fair this year, watched some goat judging and horse judging. Goats are always a lot of fun to watch. I love the 4-H exhibits, the little garden, mini mm-hmm. garden things were pretty cool. At the State Fair, I think it was last year, we discovered one of our kids is allergic to roosters.
That's
not
a tough
chickens.
Way to find out. Just
roosters. Just roosters. She's sneezing. Chickens,
hens
anything
are
else?
Fine.
No problem. Yeah, weird. Back to our callers now at 800-642-1234 as we talk about state fairs, county fairs. We've got Sandy on the line in Rhinelander. Sandy, hi.
Hi. I love the animals, all the animals.
Yeah. But you got to have a favorite, Sandy.
Well, horses, of course.
They're amazing animals. I was at the Alliant Energy Center at the Dane County Fair, as I mentioned, watching the horse judging. Any favorite breed of horse or favorite event that you love to check out?
Oh, yeah. No problem that. An Arabian, of course.
All right. Sandy, thank you so much for sharing that. Also, Gene, another thing I'm always surprised at, how many kinds of rabbits there are.
There are more rabbits than you can shake a stick at. And, you know, it's always interesting. You mentioned the horses. There are always cattle, and it depends what part of the state you're in. Sometimes you have different breeds of cattle. There's a lot of pigs, mm-hmm. a lot of barrows and gilts on display. You've got your chickens, sometimes pigeons. You see that?
I've seen pigeons at state mm-hmm. fair and a little bit at the county fair.
And it really kind of depends. And one thing I haven't seen, I've always heard rumors of this, is like the canning displays when people can peaches and then they're there and you're supposed to admire them somehow.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. They do really, they do neat stuff. And I mentioned the cake decorating. It's brilliant. There's some really great craft stuff if you go to the indoor spots usually.
And don't forget about the entertainment. Fairs always have music of one kind. A lot of times it's local music. And a lot of times it's not. I went in 1979, 1980, I'm trying to remember the exact year, I went to see Head East at the Monroe County Fair.
Wow.
It was a great show.
That stuck with you.
It still does to this day. I remember it well.
Well, back to our callers now. We've got Faye on the line in Chautauqua. Faye, hi. There she is. Faye, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your fair memory?
Well, it was the early 60s, later 50s, and I went with my brother and his family, and I got to see Roy Rogers and Trigger.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
So it was wonderful.
Did you get to talk with Roy Rogers?
I got to shake his hand.
No kidding. And Trigger, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Faye, that is a great memory. I don't know if we get to meet celebrities like that at fairs so much anymore.
I'll bet you still do, and I'll bet that out there are somebody out there, some celebrity that other people have met too. They may not be of the stature quite of a Roy Rogers or a Trigger, where they're sort of this American legend, but they are definitely out there. Let's go to Peggy now, and Peggy is with us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Peggy.
Hi there. I actually don't live in Wisconsin anymore, but I grew up in northern Wisconsin. And every year, my brother, sister, and I would take the train down from Antigo, northern Wisconsin, down to Milwaukee
wow.
to see my sister, and she would take us to the state fair. And it was just so exciting for three kids.
Oh, my gosh, especially,
brain, first of all.
Especially for three kids from Antigo getting to the big city.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it was really fun. And then we got to go to the fair and spend the whole day there with her. So it's a neat memory. I mean, I live in California now, but I'll never forget the fair in Milwaukee.
Great. Thank you so much, Peggy. That is a great memory. Thanks for sharing that. We're talking state fairs, county fairs, the state fair going on through this weekend in Milwaukee County, talking about our favorite memories of fairs, what keeps us coming back to them. The food, the people, the music, and the livestock. We've got Joan on the line in Baraboo now. Joan, hi.
Hi. My favorite memory is of the 20-odd years that I spent as a 4-H leader in Ozaukee County, which is the smallest county in the state. And I think the thing that sticks in my mind and in my heart is the look on the faces of the young people showing their animals. You had to look at the kid and look at the sheep and look at the face of each of them, and the look on the face of the bull or the cow or the calf, and look at the kid. And it was just awesome. The kids just, the hope and the wishing in their faces was just unreal. And I would not have given up that time that I gave to 120 kids in my county for my 4-H club for anything. I'm so proud of what they've done with their lives, and they're just wonderful memories. 4-H is awesome.
And Joan, that's a big moment in their lives, win or lose. They're up in front of people doing what they love.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
And they do it wonderfully. So
thanks so much for that call, Joan. And I found out this is a big anniversary year for 4-H. We ought to do a show on that, actually.
Well, I think you know somebody who can make that happen, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we have the power.
Okay, let's do that. Let's go to, looks like we've got time for one more quick call from Samaje in Stevens Point.
Hi.
Hi.
This is a county fair situation. My father was a meat cutter at a local dining establishment, and this dining establishment always found great pride in purchasing, you know, the blue prize number one county fair winning cattle, or not a cow, I guess it wouldn't be, steer. Mm-hmm. And so my father always cut it up, and they always featured 20 tenderloin from the
winner,
blue prize steer. But he always came home laughing so hard because they ended up selling about 2,000 to 3,000 tenderloin from the winning steer.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. It does bring new meaning to the concept of winning.
It does indeed. So lots of state fair memories there. And you can keep this conversation going by sharing your memories on the Central Time Facebook page.
Got to give a shout out to our producer, Amanda Magnus, and at the Maryland Agricultural Fair as a kid, winning third place in the children's division in the pig calling contest. She declined to do a demonstration for us today, though.
And understand it was her first time at it, so she's apparently a natural.
A natural, yeah.
So it would be great if she would do that for us.
Maybe something for the pledge drive. I don't
yeah,
know.
There you go.
Well, again, head over to the Central Time Facebook page. You can keep sharing your fair memories, maybe the favorite thing you've seen at the state fair this year as well.